This place is dangerous. Okay, mic check. Click, click, click. 3, 2, 1. All right, I either have allergies or I have a cold. No one cares which. Anyway, all right, so last week, I don't know. Honestly, I think I was sick last week. I don't think what was wrong with me last week was allergies. I had zero motivation, if that counts as a sickness or if that's a symptom of something. I'm sure you guys can let me know. Whatever, however many there are of you. Anyway, did I mention this is mic check? Alright, it turns out that I wrote like crazy under a tree at a picnic table in a park here. And, see, you hear that? I have allergies or I'm sick. Anyway, so I wrote under a tree, and then I did some revising, editing, as I typed what I wrote into a Google Doc. And those of you who get the newsletter probably know, that means that chapter 9 is composed and has reached the first revision, first edit, whatever it's called. I should check it again just to make sure that the punctuation is something I can read. And also, this podcast is late because I normally record these on Monday. But I did record some stuff. It was just me reading the John Ormsby thing. You may have it already. It's the bonus number 18 episode. Just me reading the Cervantes bio. Anyway, I guess I can say welcome to the Cormorant Cafe. My name is Rob, but you'll get that in the intro. Oh, right. So I'm going to read the chapter 9 thing, and also I'm going to wedge in a bunch of lesbian love poetry from the hymnal. And also, of course, we have the three... I have three clips from Morrency, from the WTF project, which, if she doesn't stop me, I'm going to put all three of them into this episode because I've gotten way behind. And she thought I was asking her for more, and she was like, oh, I don't really have anything, or I have enough material for one more, but I have brain fog. So I was like, no, you're way ahead of schedule. All right, this is supposed to be a mic check. It's 2.5 minutes. It's almost 3 minutes. Jesus. All right, well, the next bits are going to be Jen giving the intro, the commercial, and then three Jennifer bits with me in between, I don't know, proving that I listened. All right, here's your 3.25 minute mic check. Click, click, click. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
From an undisclosed location in the Nevada desert, this is Jennifer Morency of WTF Radio. Welcome to Open Mic Night at the Cormorant Cafe, with your master of ceremonies and master of debates, Rob. My teddy bears were stolen by a...
Alright, so this first WTF is called Lying Politicians. And I've either heard it and forgot, or I haven't heard it, so forget it. This is a lie. I've probably heard it, because I have to make sure the file's intact when she gets it into my grubby little hands. But I will listen, and you can listen, and then I will talk about it in a few minutes. Enjoy.
This is Jennifer Morency with a World Telecommunications Forum political commentary. The following segment discusses topics which may be highly disturbing to some audiences, so listener discretion is strongly advised. One reason that I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat is that the politicians from both major parties tell a lot of lies to the public. Some Republicans have been lying about the coronavirus vaccine, falsely claiming that it contains antifreeze or some type of other poison. That's just not true. All three vaccines that have been authorized in the USA for emergency use have been shown to be safe and effective in phase 3 trials comprising at least 20,000 people in each study. A longer-term real-world study conducted with 600,000 Pfizer vaccine recipients also found the shots safe and effective against the UK variant of the virus. The Pfizer vaccine contains a small amount of polyethylene glycol, which is a perfectly safe compound also found in food. Of course, some Democrats are also lying. I've seen a claim going around lately that some 38,000 Americans are either killed by quote-unquote gunfire or quote-unquote gun violence every year. That is also false. Since the entire U.S. murder rate from all weapons was 16,000 last year, there's no way that 38,000 people could have been murdered by gunfire, because that's more than the entire number of people who were murdered. The 38,000 number is purposely misleading. They're counting the number of gun suicides and suicides only by gun as murders, but they're not counting any other suicide method as murder. The only reason that they're doing this is to scare you into thinking that the US is much more dangerous than it really is. They're trying to trick you into thinking the murder rate is 3 times higher than the actual number. The truth is, the US is not a very dangerous country. The murder rate in the US has been stable for around 20 years at about 5 per 100,000 people, which means you have an annual chance of only 0.5% of being murdered in the USA. True, it's not as low as in Europe, where the rate is around 3 per 100,000 people, but the US is a lot safer than most other countries in the Western Hemisphere. The murder rate in Mexico, for example, is around 15 per 100,000 people, 3 times higher than in the USA. Much of that is caused by the disastrous war on drugs. Put another way, gun homicide accounts for only 0.4% of US deaths, meaning that 99.6% of people who died in an average year before COVID died by something other than gun homicide. Anyone who tells you that the USA is the most violent country in the world is lying. What's really killing Americans is the lousy healthcare system, which is a disorganized patchwork of sporadic, poorly regulated, and often unaffordable medical services. If they really wanted to save lives, government leaders would be encouraging universal healthcare, rather than trying to trick people into thinking the biggest hazard is random homicide by some rural gun enthusiast with an expensive sporting rifle. The recent tragedy in Atlanta is a reminder of the horrible effects of both racial bigotry and the persecution of people involved with the sex industry. A lot of the anti-Asian bigotry in the US over the past year was fueled by Donald Trump and the Republican Party, who tried to blame their own failures on China and Asian people in general. The persecution of people in the adult industry has frequently been caused by narrow religious intolerance and ignorance. Unleashing hordes of screaming unmasked cops into the homes of law-abiding gun owners isn't going to do a damn thing to remedy ignorant racist and sexual stereotypes. Only education and empathy, not violent gun control enforcement, can do that. Though I do comedy, I come from a news background, so on WTF we realize that not everything is fun and games. Thank you for being such a great audience. If you are interested in more information on these topics, including well-sourced news articles, please visit my blog at is.gd/jenmor.
Okay, well, that was our not humor clip. That was, all right, well, she clearly did a bunch of research. Well, it turns out that last week I also did some research, so, right, those two compounds are very similar sounding words, but they're not related. Polyethylene glycol is a byproduct. It's a thing that's, in general, your body produces it when you're digesting food. It's kind of like MSG. People can use that word if they like, or that term, like MSG, if they like, but it's not bad for you. And monosodium glutamate isn't bad for you. It's the taste that makes meat taste like meat. There's already that stuff in your body to a higher degree than you could give yourself by eating it. And so, if you want to look it up, it's very interesting. You like to talk about bigotry. All right, so let's see. I talked about the antifreeze. Okay, yeah. Speaking of research that we both did, I kind of accidentally shadowed Jen last week on this. That 38,000 number, what happened was I saw a tweet that repeated it. That number is almost double the number of actual murders. 38,000 is a lot of murders. That's more murders than there really are. Guns, fists, air conditioners, whatever. You know? And so, like, when I looked into it, I was like, oh, also, even if that was the real number, there are 350 million Americans. So, if you were to do the math, which Jen did, although she used the real number, you would see as she said, Mexico, our nearest neighbor, is ridiculously more dangerous. But then it's probably our fault because of the war on drugs, and I don't think she's wrong on that. Okay, the next thing. Oh, just an aside, for 2020, it sounds like COVID was the number three cause of death. So something is killing more than 500,000 people. I guess it's the heart disease. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. If they really wanted to save lives. Oh, I didn't have a comment. But yeah, we should have universal health care like every other first world country. Oh, and then she's gonna probably think I'm a racist for this, but, for what it's worth, COVID, SARS, and even the thing we call Spanish flu all came from China. And yeah, I suppose Trump and his jackass's followers can't tell the difference between talking about China or the CCP, the Communist Party, whatever. You know, fine. Or CPP? Communist Party? I don't know. But I can tell the difference, and we generally name things for where they came from. And the reason Spanish flu is called Spanish flu is that the rest of the newspapers in all of the world were talking about the First World War, but Spain was kind of eh, so they had some extra space on their pages to talk about the flu, this big flu pandemic. So everybody started calling it the Spanish flu, but if you look around, you'll have people like, oh, it came from Kansas. But no, it looks like it actually came from China, and I actually have another note about how that wasn't a funny, that wasn't a funny WTF, but I guess she also said that it wasn't funny. Let's see, we'll let this little interlude also stand in for the intro to the one that she calls real and spectacular, which has just got to be about human breasts, right? Because, yeah, they're real and they're spectacular. But I guess we'll see now, won't we? Enjoy.
This is Jennifer Morency. Welcome to another episode of WTF, the show that makes you go, WTF. The following segment contains adult humor, which may not be suitable for some listeners. Things that didn't age well, Corona, Rhythm of the Night. Good song, bad name for the band. Other things that didn't age well, remember Joe Biden's campaign promise that if he won, he'd be sending $2,000 stimulus checks out the door? So far, their biggest offering has been classic neoliberal fertility theater, which is to say big tax cuts for affluent people who have a lot of children, who will presumably grow up to become free-spending consumers themselves, and diddly squat for single adults without children as usual. So which one would be the better Attorney General, Merrick Garland or Merrick DeVille? You'd have to be very, very online, or more specifically very, very on Twitter, to understand that. I'd take my chances with DeVille. Most liberals seem to have no idea how conservative Merrick Garland is on criminal justice. He's definitely a three strikes, lock up everyone and throw away the key prosecutor from the Reagan era, who would happily imprison the same weed-smoking liberals who praise him. So I guess the pandemic is now affecting financial magazines, because even Forbes magazine is working blue these days. They just ran a headline, and I'm not making this up, about how climate change is making great tits go extinct. The article was written by a guest contributor, who calls herself Science Girl, she with a bunch of R's, and then an L. Can you imagine the conversation at that aviary? Let's imagine that the gal who's raising great tits is named Jane Mansfield, and let's say her boss is named Ezekiel, and he's complimenting her on her great tits. Ezekiel also likes birds, and he has a very large statue of a rooster made from dark wood. He says to Jane, "I like your great tits, which are real and spectacular. I'd like to put my big ebony cock in between them, and then take a picture of it for the front page of our bird sanctuary newsletter." Jane replies, "That'll cost you a pearl necklace." And they laugh and they laugh. How many of you think that joke is obscene? It's a perfectly clean joke about birds that you could tell in church, which proves that context matters. Tell that to the legislators in Utah who are trying to require that all smartphones activated in that state have pre-installed obscenity filters. Thank you all for being such a great audience tonight. If you'd like to help support quality humor and commentary like this, please donate whatever you can. My link is v.gd/jenmor. My Twitter is at Jennifer Morency with an I.
All right, kids, I can't. It seemed weird to make jokes about a section that is about jokes. Not that it would matter, I'm not sure that I... Some people think I'm funny, but I don't necessarily think I'm funny, but... Alright, well, let me see. I made notes while I was listening to Real and Spectacular. Which I guess I was wrong, it had nothing to do with human breasts. Huh, go figure. Okay, so the first thing is she warns us about the adult humor. I better make sure the flag is set, but generally speaking... these things are set to for the adult/explicit flag. Not to mention, I wouldn't be surprised if people actually literally come for the adult humor. The next note I have, I put in parentheses, "I'll defer to your greater knowledge on politics, Jen." The next note says Forbes and great tits and a little sad emoji like drawing, and Science Girl with the several R's, and I put like a little eye roll drawing. And then the next to last note I have is, "What's up with all the bird type names? Tits, boobies, shags, to name just three." And of course, finally, honestly, if you guys can, please donate to Jen. She's in a pretty precarious situation. I mean, I'm in a pretty precarious situation, but if I had money, I would donate it to her, let's put it that way. Alright, we'll make this also stand in for the intro to the next section from WTF Morency. And its file name is just Vaccine, so what do we have? 2 minutes of me talking about a 2-minute clip. Alright, so enjoy.
This is Jennifer Morency. Welcome to a special vaccine episode of Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, the show that makes you say WTF. So I finally got my first dose of the vaccine. Is it because the state finally decided that amateur comedians are essential workers? No, it's because I'm over 45, and until I can visit a stylist, I have the gray hair to prove it. You know what else is funny is that I had to go into a really bad neighborhood to get the vaccine. It's called the suburbs. I keep one good outfit of clothing on hand in case I have to go to a job interview. So that's what I had to wear to get the vaccine, so people wouldn't call the cops because they thought I looked poor. In the taxi ride on the way down, I had to pass a lot of really trashy places, like Whole Foods Market and Tesla electric car charging stations. The parking lots were filled with really big, huge black SUVs. You thought I was going to say something else, but I'm out of bird jokes today. The suburbs had stores I've never heard of before, like boutique shops that sell yoga pants with names like Forever 39. They even had a fancy fish store that offered crab legs for $60 with a neon sign flashing that said, "We take EBT cards here." I was just joking about the last part. Nobody in that neighborhood would know what an EBT card was. I see why they want to keep people like me out of their neighborhood. It's because people like me don't respect junk jewelry and flashy Rolex watches. People like me want a good deal, not a bunch of razzle-dazzle consumer marketing crap. The dollar store equivalent in the suburbs is more like Sharper Image, where if you go to buy a can of bug spray, they ask if you want it in sterling silver or 14-karat gold. So anyway, if I start posting in Russian or begin singing the praises of Bill Gates and 5G, you'll know why. All joking aside, getting the shot wasn't bad at all. The injection itself was painless, and the biggest problem I had was a slightly sore arm the next day. I've read the monographs on all three authorized vaccines, and I think the data shows that they're all safe and effective. I would encourage all of you to get the first vaccine you can get as soon as you're eligible. We need to get at least 3/4 of the adult population vaccinated so that we can begin a return to normalcy. Thank you all for being such a great audience tonight. If you'd like to chip in and help me buy something cheap and sensible at my regular dollar store, my donation link is v.gd/jenmor. My Twitter is at Jennifer Morency with an I.
All right, so I listened to vaccine, special vaccine episode. You've gotten your injection. Now, she, of course, sent this to me for last week's episode, which was not to be, since I had no motivation. And I don't, ironically, the thing that the podcast does is give me motivation to write. So, unless it starts paying somehow... Which, by the way, if it ever did, I think I would have to give Jen some money before I took some. Anyway, so she's been vaccinated, but I haven't. She says she was vaccinated because they opened it up to people over 45. I would have thought that it had something to do with one of her, I don't know, like sometimes we talk about medical things or something, and maybe you can, I don't know. I don't necessarily have a medical thing that could get me in the door. But she's in a different state than I am because mine has not opened up, even though she and I are the same damn age. It's in my notes, it's in all caps. We are the same damn age. Trashy places, like Tesla charging stations, Forever 21. Okay, that's me combining two of her jokes. So let me see. The next one was the crab legs takeaway that has the EBT cards accepted sign. In the suburbs, in the hills, and she had a bunch of people like me. Yeah. If you have a spare room, you're probably not people like Jen. She said the dollar store equivalent for those people would be Sharper Image. Unfortunately, Jen, Sharper Image has gone bankrupt, and it's been several years. You and I are both old. I only know because I care about Sharper Image. The next part was sore arms and monographs. Yes, they're safe. She said, 2/3, 3/4? No, it's worse than that. It's gonna be at least 80%, 85% of us need to be vaccinated for herd immunity to get back to normal. These numbers are based on my own, I looked into it because I thought that we just knew the number. but it's different for different viruses. It's different for different plagues. And in the case of this particular flu, this particular, it's not exactly airborne. It's on our spittle. So it's quasi-airborne. Anyway, the numbers I found, the best case scenario is 80% of us. But most of the percentages, most of the estimates are over 85% for, like a blanket immunity. It's the, what we call herd immunity. Okay, so I kind of just fact-checked a joke. Okay, I'm a dick. All right, well, now we'll get to the part that is just me reading chapter 9 and the lesbian, the classic lesbian love poetry, which, by the way, if I just declare something a classic, I guess it's a fucking classic. So I declare that chapter 7 was a classic. It's the best chapter of anything written ever, because I said so, and also because it's true. Anyway, chapter 9 is also very good. I think that chapter 7 is better than 9, and both of them are better than 8. But of course, 8 is still really damn good because I wrote it. We'll get back to that. I might read the part of the end of chapter 8 as a lead up to chapter 9, since for all of you guys, for all I know, it's been a couple weeks and you've forgotten what the fuck we're doing and what the big giant hole is. And so yeah, those of you who don't give a shit about the, redundant hymnal, lesbian, classic lesbian love poetry from The Key to Everything, which I'll read a few of those. And for those of you who don't give a shit about Macmillan the Magician, the book, the work in progress that I've been reading you at the edit or second edit phase, you can just quit now. And thank you for the tally on the listens. We get a tally. And so I'm yay, thank you for coming to the Cormorant Cafe. Thank you, Jennifer, for your 2 humor clips and 1 unintentional humor clip. No, that's not true. It wasn't unintentionally humorous. It was just statistics about stuff and how politicians are cunts. All right, so as I said, thank you for listening. Thank you, Jennifer, for the introduction and the 3 clips. Sorry about last week. All right, for those of you who are still listening, enjoy chapter 9. And enjoy the, it'll be at least 2 lesbian love poems. God, this is 5 minutes of me dissecting. I'm sorry, proving that I listened to the vaccine clip and introducing the Rob section of Open Mic. And, as always, you guys can, find me. I'm Cormorant Hobo on Twitter, but everywhere else in the known universe and in the past on Twitter, I was Common Cormorant. Just Twitter's a cunt, and they're overzealous piece of shit robots, don't want to offend anyone, so they permanently suspended me for a joke that offended no one, I promise you. All right, I'm less bitter now. Gonna read my chapter 9. Very excited. Chapter 9 is wonderful. Did some research, found some obscure shit, threw together chapter 7, under a tree in the park. It was wonderful. It is wonderful. Not as good as 7, sorry, but I think better than 8. You guys can tell me. All right, so enjoy. Alright, I'll start the section that sane people have probably skipped with a classic lesbian love poem from our hymnal, The Key to Everything, edited by Jerry Gomez Perlberg, and that's Jerry with a G, like G-E-R-R-Y. I've got a page marked for some reason, don't know why. Let's go. I want to find a short one. They're all short, it's a joke. So I still have quote-unquote allergies. Ooh, there's an Emily Dickinson. That might actually be a classic. It doesn't seem to have a title. Let me make sure I'm on the first section. All right, so flip to page 14 if you have a copy of The Key to Everything, or do your search for Emily Dickinson. Wild Nights! Wild Nights! There's an exclamation mark. Don't know nothing. All right, Wild Nights! Wild Nights! Were I with thee, wild nights should be our luxury. Oh God, we're going to rhyme, are we? Futile, the winds, to a heart in port. Done with the compass, done with the chart. Rowing in Eden, ah, the sea. Might I moor tonight in thee? Wow, Emily, you're dirty. Emily Dickinson is dirty. All right, we're going to read from chapter 9, which means we probably should start with the last little bit of chapter 8. Chapter 9 is not anywhere near as long as chapter 8, so don't worry. I guess if you're here, you want it to be longer. I mean, if you're still here, ha. All right, let me queue up chapter 8, the end of chapter 8, while we, here's some titty music or whatever the hell it's called. There is one of those little tilde marks here in chapter 8 of Macmillan the Magician, and it's pretty much leaves only one page to read. And so I can just sum it up real quick. They basically, I'll sum up part of chapter 8. There was a guy, and he tried to extract lymph fluid from the narrator, and then she managed to kill him or something like that. So there's a crash. Oh, and then she had to kill him again because she accidentally touched him, like you do. Anyway, and then so there's a crash, and then her agent finds her or whatever, because he's nearby when she wakes up, or when she regenerates or whatever it is. All right, so here we are. Chapter 8 of Macmillan the Magician. Anyway, it has a cheeky super title, Chapter 7, Part 2. Chapter 8's actual title is The Angel and the Vampire. I don't know what this last section was titled, because the part of the section I'm reading doesn't have a title. All right, so she says, as I've said, I had no idea where we were. There were mountains nearby, and as I certainly hadn't left the Millisundmus, that's her, I think it's Estonian, it just means bubble, is that because of the way she's moving in time, if she were to leave the bubble, she assumes that she would disappear and stop existing the way the imp at the end of chapter 7 did. And she's probably right. I don't know, because I'm not going to have her exit this stupid area to find out. All right, as I've said, I had no idea where we were. There were mountains nearby, and as I certainly hadn't left the Musundmus. my pronunciation of Estonian is probably horrible. Anyway, it says probably, and then question mark. That was most likely north. There aren't any mountains to the south of the bubble area, for what it's worth. Maybe I'll publish a map in the book. I can draw it real easy for you. There's a couple mountain ranges to the north, and there's pretty much nothing. The ocean is in the west, and there's some hilly garbage to the west. And then there's some mountains to the south, but you wouldn't be able to get to them from inside the valley, let alone get to them from inside the thing where the story takes place. So she says she's most likely north. Fortunately, Butch, and I said when she woke up, Butch was there. Her agent's name is Butch. Butch did know, and he briefed me. We were south of the Wolf, the mountain range I'd eventually call home, yet far, far from West Covina. She's talking, you know, on foot. If you were driving, it's still 10, 20 minutes, depending on traffic. Anyway, yet far, far from West Covina. For some reason, it's not italicized this time. It should be. North and a bit east, to be clear, where our surveillance station and the Imp's underground dungeon were located. Pretty sure she already knows the underground dungeon has disappeared. Anyway, she continues, I felt like I could use a walk and Butch accompanied me, although this wasn't strictly speaking necessary. We struck off heading due south, the sun ahead but to the right indicating early afternoon. On our walk, I found myself falling behind, spacing out, and even spontaneously mumbling angry missives concerning my recent encounter. Butch became more and more attentive and sympathetic as the hours and kilometers passed. About halfway, we walked near enough a second crater, which at that time neither of us gave a second thought to, but then after another hour or so, we encountered a third crater, and after about an hour again, a fourth. A few hours before sunset, we reached the original crater and our surveillance station. There was a chill in the air. And then the last paragraph for chapter 8 goes like this. As Bush began dismantling the surveillance station, I returned to the shadows where I busied myself digging up the egg sac and torching the nearly hatched pulsating eggs, NutriPak and all. I may have cried, were that a thing I could do? Fuck that guy, I grumbled, sadly, angrily, as I rejoined Butch, when, briefly, I rubbed the back of my own neck and then worked with Butch in silence. All right, 5 minutes of that nonsense, just to catch us all up, and I guess I'll read another classic lesbian love poem, which, and we'll pick this one. So jump to page 41 in your hymnals. Okay, are you on page 41 in your hymnals, my parishioners? We're going to read from page 41 and 42. These are two very short, what is it called? Classic lesbian love poems from The Key to Everything, which is what I call our hymnal, which is what this book reminds me of because it's this tiny little thing. All right. Irina Klepfiz. Klepfizes. I would think it was a fake name if I thought it was pronounceable. K-L-E-P-F-I-S-Z. Periods of stress, which, by the way, I might not be the only one reading this, so don't be shocked if you hear this again in the future. It is unwise during periods of stress or change to formulate new theories. Case in point, when about to begin a new love affair without having ended the previous one, do not maintain that more freedom is required for the full expression of individual personality or that various lifestyles are possible. And all kinds of interesting situations still need to be explored. Try instead. I am tired. Tired of the nearness, this small apartment, of the watering can and level of the window shade. I prefer to drift toward more spacious rooms, toward intimate restaurants and dimly lit, unfamiliar beds, new love techniques. But do not throw me out. I am too frightened to venture out alone. Let me stay till I'm secure again, somewhere else, and then leave me alone. And the next one is from Naomi Raplansky, and it's called Jealousy, and it's only 4 lines long. From 500 miles away, jealousy can hear the crumbling of a pillow beneath two heads. It's kind of cute. Alright, next will be actually chapter 9. The new, brand new, hot off the press. Not really, if you subscribe to the newsletter, you've already got access to chapter 9, and it probably is better for you to read it than for you to listen to me. Ugh, you poor bastards. Alright, well, next up, chapter 9, after the titty music or whatever it's called. Tighter, snowbird, whatever. feel like now we're back, just you and me and the new material. All right, chapter 9, title, The Ogre Corn. Ogre Corn? I had Twitter people help me with this monster name, so you can blame those guys. It's ogre plus unicorn, in case it's not obvious. But it's O-G-R-I-C-O-R-N. That's enough of telling you things. I don't want it to be behind the scenes or whatever. Only like 3 people voted, so I shouldn't even bother. Chapter 9, The Ogre Corn. Ogre Corn. The super title is Chapter 7, Part 3. It really just never ends, you know? That's actually the title, the super title. Alright, Part 1 is The Giant ... Holes. And then she has one of her little narrator asides. In spite of my new tendency to space out, yell angrily at random intervals, jump as though scared, or shake uncontrollably for no apparent reason, and happily indulge myself in daydreams of murderous desires, I was mostly able to function. All right. She says, I headed south along the stream edge, and Butch Zip Piff went back to investigate the recorded data from the now dismantled bird hide. I continued traveling south for over 3 hours, alternating between walking, wandering in a cloud of thoughts and anger, sprinting and hopping as high as I was physically able. I detected no additional craters. I then struck west away from the river and traveled in a kind of zigzag for a couple more hours or so. Bottom line, there were no more giant holes south of where the imp had dug his hideout bunker. So I headed back there, where I had arranged with my agent to rendezvous later. I made camp next to the river stream. I used that water for a relaxing bath and ate small fishes, which, in my imagination at least, thought I was a cannibal giant of their kind. Thus, I cleared my head a little and tried to snap out of my malaise or new murderous rage, whatever you want to say. My agent eventually returned. It was around noon of the next day when I saw him again. You won't like this, he said without preamble, handing me a torn slip of antique photographic paper. This image was terrible, grainy, out of focus, sepia. The content, I said, or the quality? My agent laughed. I handed him the torn photo, and after a last hard look, he dropped it on the ground near the lip of the crater. That, he explained, is an ogre, although in researching across several worlds and timelines, I couldn't account for the horn or the single eye. He absentmindedly kicked loose dirt into the crater. Ogre corn, I said, stifling a giggle. Yeah, sure, he said, and we both laughed. All right, so that's the first section. It's the first part of the first section, but it's good. Not long. 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes. And move to page, 21 in your hymnals for the next section. Okay, so, as I say, open your hymnal to page 21. I'm absolutely certain that by now you've all bought a copy of the classic lesbian love poems book called The Key to Everything. It's 21, page 21. Christos, it's C-R-Y-S-T-O-S. All right, that has zero significance to me. Zero. This one's on the next page. This is long. For this book, for this tiny book, a 2-page poem is long. Okay, the title is I Like a Woman Who Packs, and I feel like I've read this before. Too bad for you guys. I like a woman who packs, not because she wants to be a man, but... Oh, I'm sorry. I threw in a word. The title is I Like a Woman Who Packs. And the first line starts off as though the title was another line. Not because she wants to be a man, because she knows I want a butch. Who can loop my wrist with leather, whisper, stay right here. I have something I need to do to you. Who can smile wide when I ask her to dance, because I've noticed the bulge in her pants. It tells me to come back for a slow number because she doesn't do fast. I like a woman who will make me beg for it, ride me till I forget my name, the date, the president, prime minister, and every head of state. I like to sashay around the street a bit with her watching my legs and breasts and ass while I watch her hands and mouth and the neighbors gasp. I like a woman who can make me over into whatever she wants as long as she wants, and as long as she wants, wet and hungry to my heart. I like it when she grabs my hair, says, don't move until I tell you. I like a woman who packs, stands behind me in a crowded room, leaning into my back, whispers in my ear, hey, you want to give it up to me? I like her tall or short, heavy or slim, walking or riding a chair, brown or pink, old or young. I like a woman who can take me under when she takes me over. Then let me suck her, get in trouble, snap her gloves. I like a woman who wants to be the best fuck I've ever had. I like a woman who snacks. All right. Well, that was fun. Certainly, you agree with me. All right. So we will continue our entree into chapter 9. All right. So this is still part one. It's, I guess, the second part of part one. Part 1.2. Where were we? Okay, here we are. Seaside. Here we are. What's old Mac doing right now? Do we know? As I said this, I started walking to the edge of the woods. We returned to my time, where he tinkered with the machines while I got dressed and fed the pets. We had coffee and scones, or whatever this sad, dry, bland pastry is called. She has a little note. It says, butchers people certainly eat a lot of compressed grains. In the quiet spaces between conversation topics, he would shake me out of a reverie or a nightmare or daydream about going back and shooting or just punching Blake in the face repeatedly. And I told myself it would pass for the 100,000th time. Shoot, I hit the microphone. Sorry about that, you guys. Okay, and I told myself it would pass for the 100,000th time. In the interest of continuity and not inadvertently causing a nexus ruining and apocalyptic paradoxical situation, to say nothing of maintaining sanity, I'd been keeping the Chateau chronographs locked to, quote, real time, end quote, Macmillan, at least since he dispatched the imp. We checked our other surveillance stations and my agent's additional sources, such as newspaper archives, which he secured using his own methods and likely those botched machines he was tinkering with, as noted above. As you, dear reader, are probably aware by now, we found no mentions of giants or ogres or giant furry cyclopses, no one-eyed monster with a single horn. Whoops. No one-eyed monsters with a single large horn mentioned. Ditto. Sorry about that. I'm something like a cold. She says, no one-eyed monsters with a single large horn mentioned. Ditto. Ogricorns or ogre unicorns or cyclocorns. This isn't good. The bubble event, the miasma, if you will, traveling a billion years in both directions, was infecting the physical area, making it susceptible to outside shocky events, as noted, but it was also rewriting time itself. Our reference materials were real for the original timeline. And this we could verify using the Nexus and comparing with Earth's multiverse twin sister worlds. I was of the opinion we had to get rid of the monster. Butch thought there was a delay between Macmillan's irresponsible crash fallout and the records, akin to some kind of delayed network database update. I reminded him that in the past it was either instantaneous or that the changes swept us with them and we'd never even know something was edited, says italics, in this way. My position, the Ogre Corn had to go, and immediately. To effect this, there were a couple issues which needed addressing. We couldn't risk meeting ourselves in the past. We couldn't risk transmitting future data, data concerning the future, to ourselves in the past. Butch had an idea that was insane and pretty difficult and likely doomed to fail, although that the monster was gone when we found the last crater. That it was the last crater, even? that it was the last crater, even. This one of her notes. Maybe means it works. Who am I to comment? He laid it out, and I, with the benefit of hindsight... there's some slight editing needed again. Ugh. I really kind of hope that I didn't just screw this up, because... there was a typo. He laid it out, and I, with the benefit of hindsight, shall paraphrase. We send instruction code to the bird hide moments after the monster appears to pause all surveillance for 2 hours. Then we appear just out of range using our fancy, read illegal, methods to the north and west. We stay out of range and find and follow the Ogre Corps. The whole plan is a disaster of paradoxical accidents waiting to happen. The risks were considerable. But, I don't know, perhaps my curiosity about the creature was stronger than my sense of self-preservation. Especially after my encounter with that hideous vampire Blake. And that's the end of part one. And so, jump to page, I don't know, we'll go to page 43. Go to page 43 in your hymnal, parishioners. I kill me. All right. Is everybody on page 43 in their hymnal? It should be. This one's called Changing What We Mean by Eloise Klein Healy. Turning your back, you button your blouse. That's new. You redirect the conversation. A man has entered it. Your therapist has given you permission to discuss this with me. The word you've been looking for in desire. You can now say heterosexual with me. We mean different things when we say it. I mean the life I left behind forever. For you, it's a new beginning, a stab at being normal again, a desire to enter the world with a man instead of a woman. And of course, there's the word you won't claim for yourself anymore. You, who have children to think of. You who have put me in line behind them and mean to keep the order clear. It's really my word against yours anymore in this new language, in this battle over how a man is about to enter this closed room of desire. We've gingerly exchanged keys too, and desire isn't what's at issue anyway. You say to me, instead, I learn a man can protect you in a way a woman only means to but never can. And this world is too new when there's real life out there, word after word, for how normal looks, each word cutting like scissors a profile of desire, a man facing a woman, nothing particularly new or interesting to me. I've wanted only to face you and the world simultaneously, say what I mean with my body, my choice to not be a man, to be a woman with you. Forget the man's part, or how his body is the word, for that touch can contain what love means. If this were only about desire, you say I'd still desire you. But it isn't passion we're defining new. New consequences emerge when a man and desire are part of the words we hurl. You changing how you mean loving. This terrible final news. Holy cow. That was kind of painful. That poor girl. All right. So now we're moving on to officially part two of chapter 9 of Macmillan, the Magician. See you there. All right, so I guess we're on part two, which actually has a name. Here it is. Part two of chapter 9 is called Odin. Odin. The first part of Butch's plan worked fine. We appeared. She has appeared in italics. We appeared in 1886, and we were out of range of our bird hide, and probably, this is one of her notes, and probably the local people hadn't developed technology to detect us and our vortices. Anyway, end the note. I arrived dressed as I had been before Blake tried to suck out my fluids in a vain attempt to make essence of Tismin juice and got us both gassed and exploded. Butch shook my shoulder. Whatever it is, Butch and I had been calling an ogre corn. It somehow interferes with our sensory equipment, so we couldn't get an image that doesn't look like a thumb smudge of shit on a grainy black and white photo of nothing in particular. So I'll have to do my best to describe it. Feel free to use your imagination. The monster du jour was 2¾ meters tall, 2¾ meters tall, fluffy, probably. She put probably, a question mark. With a bright green iridescent fur or feathers. Honestly, you probably don't want to get close enough to contradict this. Had a large, though short, but still pointy horn. A single large eye in the middle of its face, though it did have a little bit of a forehead. A hole where humans and my kind... she's Esperanto for the gigantic lizards. her my kind have a nose, or at least nostrils, and a pointy, tooth-filled, round, sucker-like mouth and no chin. It didn't, so far as we ever saw, leave footprints. And the mystery that started this whole stupid self-destructive project, the craters, they weren't made by the ogre corn. At least, not directly. With our own eyes, we could see what was missing from the machine's images. It, the monster, was surrounded by a cloud of Ildflugelblikand. That's Estonian, by the way. The first word is firefly, and the second word is butterflies, like plural. I wouldn't bother telling you, except that it matters later. Whose blinking green... yellow lighted wings flitted. Butch called them fairies, and I would have argued vehemently, but I didn't bring the folklore in encyclopedia. Pretty sure that's Danish, just folklore encyclopedia. So I let him have this one. After all, he went along when I called the monster an ogre corn. One of the behaviors the giant had, which we had attributed to our machine's messed up sensors, was that it traveled as though drunk or controlled by an external force, like by nudging. Butch thought it was a pet of his fairies. It rarely, if ever, walked in a straight line. If you'll imagine controlling a drunk Seltsimees, it just means comrade in Estonian, by whispering about where he or she may find a toilet and by sometimes giving him or her an abrupt shove, you'll get a feeling of what my agent and I were observing. Although your comrade would also have to be a fuzzy, green, noseless giant cyclops with a rhino horn. My theory was that the ogrecorn was a projection not unlike giants I'd seen before, projected by superheating air into a local visible three-dimensional plasma, which, though not hot to the touch, could lift objects. She has a note that says, my uncle tried to explain this to me once. Anyway, that ends the note. Projected by disgusting orcs or an... Okay, now... this is intentionally Danish because the sword... She just uses Danish a lot. You'll just have to go with it. Anyway, it's an artifact sword, but its artifact is actually spelled Danish, and sword is SV, that weird AE symbol, RD. Anyway, and so I sent my agent back for a butterfly net. We observed the creature as it stumbled about and eventually over to where the next hole would be. As we'd seen on our way from the crash site to the imp's crater and the Eldflu Liblikand fairies all landed and pretty rapidly dug out a giant melon ball-like crater. They shimmered and seemed to stand aside to admire their work. This last phase lasted an hour or two with their wings winking in unison. Soon enough, they were off to the next loci. Her word for location is loci, L-O-C-I. Now, of course, my agent and I knew where that would be, so we went on ahead, establishing a kind of temporary bird hide. This continued for several days, and one or both of us would return to my time for equipment or food or bath, or to feed goblins and gremlings, or to stare at a wall. When we got to the location of the last, and then her note is like a joke, or first, depending on who is counting and when. When we got to the location of the last hole, my agent walked over as the fairies were, as italics, admiring their handiwork, and simply caught one with the net. But the net came into contact with it's a solid object, but she says it's in another language because it kind of matters. But the net came into contact with a solid object, which was not visible to us or our equipment. At any rate, he returned to my position and we examined the creature. This was a very small, human-looking, though slightly tinged of a green, girl of not more than 18 centimeters. She wrestled with no one inside the net, and I carefully placed a mason jar over her as my agent removed the net. She tapped against the glass, and her wings kind of sagged. Eventually, she sat, wings open, but pulsing slightly, in the middle of the space, cross-legged, arms crossed, and face crossed. "She's speaking," I said to Butch, and we both leaned down. But it was not to be. By now, the others were aflutter, and the ogrecorn was awake, relative to normal, and its... Eldflu Liblikand, I mean fairies, yes, were heading for us. Before we could learn how formidable these things may be, and aware that technically we were in the wrong, probably, I opened a slip vortex and Butch and I hastily retreated and disappeared into it. Okay, there is a part break here. Yeah, okay. So we're going to go to page... Actually, I don't know which page yet. Let's see. We're going to jump to page... Yeah, I guess we can do... No. I don't want to jump to the very next page. Let's see what... How many pages are there? Oh, good. So, let's see. We can't go there. That's too far. How about we just jump to page... Let's see. Here... Wow, this book is short. All right, we'll jump to the very last page in the hymnal. Are you guys ready? Wow, all right. So, I don't want to go to the last page in the hymnal. That seems like the kind of thing that we would put in the bonus episode. Let's jump to page 70. All right. So, yeah, that, I don't know if you heard, that was a big sneeze, man. My face hurts. But my ex thinks it might just be allergies. I mean, we're all wearing masks, so what the fuck? And I don't have any contact with anyone. I'm picking up viruses from the dog. I don't know. I don't know what it could be. All right. Where was I? You guys, you parishioners, you have the key to everything in your hands, the hymnal. Open page 70. 70. This is Sherry Moraga. C-H-E-R-R-I-E is the first name, and M-O-R-A-G-A is the last name. Loving in the war years. Loving you is like living in the war years. I do think of Bogart and Bergman. Not clear who's who, but still singing in long, smoky mood into the piano bar. Drinks straight up the last bottle in the house while bombs split outside a broken world. A world war going on, but you and I still insisting in each other, still insisting in each our own heads, still thinking how if I could only make some contact with that woman across the keyboard. We size each other up. Yes. Loving you has this kind of desperation to it, like do or die. I, having eyed you from the first time you made the decision to move from your stool to live dangerously, all on the hunch that in our exchange of photos of old girlfriends, names of cities and memories, back in the States, the fronts we've manned out here on the continent, all this on the hunch that this time there'll be no need for resistance. Loving in the war years calls for this kind of risking, without a home to call our own. I've got to take you as you come to me, each time like a stranger all over again, not knowing what deaths you saw today. I've got to take you as you come, battle bruised, refusing our enemy, fear. We're all we've got, you and I, maintaining this wartime morality, where being queer and female is as rude as we can get. That's all right, yeah. All right, so I guess we're back to, what is that, chapter 9, part 2.2. Allergies. I don't think so. I didn't have allergies before. I just don't like this thing where you sneeze and people just think you have allergies. I see like kids and they sneeze and then the grandma's like, oh, it must be your allergies. So the kid gets this seed planted. And if it's not allergies, well, no, I'm wrong. I might just be wrong, but maybe I'll see a doctor who's an allergist if that's a thing. Do I have allergies? They'll probably like to stab me in the back with a bunch of pins with crap on it. I don't know how they test. I just assume it's messy. Alright, so let's make sure we are where we think we are. Okay, so that's part 2.1, I guess. And so this is part 2.2. So here we are, I guess. Me, my agent, and our unhappy kidnapped fairy at my bungalow in the Wolf Mountain Range half a billion years in her future. Probably things were already bad. Butch and I constructed a kind of stage inside a glass-sided terrarium, and we tried to wire it for sound. I placed the slightly green butterfly-winged girl in. All the sounds always came through distorted, but the little creature seemed to be speaking a sped-up version of a language in our own database. Norwegian. She sounded like this. And there's some Norwegian, which I hesitate to try to pronounce. It doesn't matter, because some of these letters we don't have in English. I'll do my best. Ah, Curie, Havor, Erdu, Sostin, Sostrin, Mine, Havar, Curie, Odin, Havar, Havar, For, Fick, Jag, Snap, Og, Aline, Sa, Aline, Ah, send Meg. See. Returned on Butch's bodged together real-time translation, and the next part was, so she's translating it out. It was a dream. We all carry with us this dream that something wonderful will happen, that it must happen, that time will open, that the heart will open, that doors will open, that cliffs will be opened, that springs will well forth, that the dream will be opened, that we one peaceful morning will glide in onto a bay we had not been aware of. That's the end of the thing that thing was saying. Nonsense and gibberish? She puts question mark. Okay, next paragraph. She continued on like this for several minutes, speaking and sometimes even singing to no one in particular. It put one in mind of a stage performance, musical theater perhaps. Eventually, after a pause in these described vocalizations, speeches, sonnets, and songs, and as though suddenly aware of my agent and I, she tilted her tiny head up, opened her butterfly-like glowy wings, which were almost a fire orange, and said, "Do hard, snap it, Meg!" And that's, "You've kidnapped me!" Exclamation mark. "Yes," I said, hoping my agent's bodged together speech translator would convey my meaning adequately. "We noticed giant holes and followed your people." And she has a little note where, since I waited for the translations. Okay, so I actually put the thing in the Norwegian in case somebody wants to copy paste or, you know, do the translating. But what she says is pretty obvious. So she accused us of kidnapping her. And then the "men do har tat Meg, do har loftet Meg som kalv for kalv slakting," and then two exclamation marks, "fra hens uvetind mor, do der monster der kidnapper," as she's calling them monstrous kidnappers, "der Insexamlers, blah blah blah. Dear Insexamlier." The note says, "Did she say bug collectors?" I ignored the accusation as it was pretty much a given and introduced us. So then she's writing her version of the Norwegian. "Jeg Tismen Datter Herr Cassidy." We gestured at our own chests, and when I said it, I indicated him. "I think we can return you to your swarm and your ogrecorn cyclops monster." Pause for translation. "But you and they and that beast, you do not belong where we found you." "Havor jeg horber himmel. Heaven du till foretell Meg Havor Jag horror Hajim Jag hatedag. Returner Meg Med and Gang." She questioned, so then the translation is, so she says, she questioned our right to say who belongs where and demanded we return her at once. The hate comment didn't need a translation, or to be said at all, in point of fact. At any rate, the translation was, if not accurate, at least rapid and coherent. I could only hope it made sense going the other direction. So this is her talking. This is our narrator talking. "There's an entity that I was cut off as dirt and several rocks splashed and chunked against the window. For what reason, I cannot, in my wildest imaginings, outline for you. My agent opened the window and helped a goblin onto the sill. I was about to resume talking when my pet, we called that one Melbourne, jumped up and snatched the fairy, who elicited a panicked cry from the enclosure." Okay, he snapped her from the enclosure. "Melbourne ran and hopped and laughed and climbed and clambered as he played, and my jackass of an agent tried to wrest the smaller creature from Melbourne's vile and vicious little game." I sighed. "I've seen what playing goblins can do to gremlins and squirrels, and for me it was over already." "Melbourne, return the bug this instant," I said, as stern and matronly as I might in the already brusque tones of the goblin tongue. And chagrined, he endeavored to do so, dodging Butch one additional time in the process. Melbourne placed the fairy onto the stage in the glass-walled terrarium, where she sat for a moment, one wing bent at a terrible angle, the other also broken, neither glowing, neither moving at all. A sigh as she exhaled, and protection of Odin. It's a quote. A prayer, perhaps, and she slumped and died and lay at an impossible angle. I glared at my agent and I glared at Melbourne. Melbourne! And I pointed at the still open window, and the goblin left, and my agent dutifully closed the window. Butch, you opened the window? That's a quote. But then we were both peering into the enclosure at our deceased captive. This is your fault, I accused. Twice, actually. Twice! End quote. My agent shrugged. I didn't ask him why he would let one of the goblins into the room where a glowing creature, a creature, my dear readers, which resembled so many of their toys, and which was likely fragile as well, was out in the open. It no longer mattered. I've never, in my millions of years, seen her species before. My voice was still stern. And I have absolutely no idea if this will work. Sadly, quietly, I said, I hope. Probably I do not need to tell you, my reader, that it did work, her people being much, much closer to mine in appearance than the Rasvad Nepalmapalid, the locals call orcs. She may have called them something like napalm sacks or something. The locals call orcs, and if you don't know, my father had no trouble reviving them, even in mass. Careful as possible, I lifted the little creature and placed her flat on my palm and watched as she healed and awakened. Mother! She was addressing me, but I needed to get her closer to the microphones. I regret that I have slandered you. Butch and I exchanged a glance. Please, I said, think nothing of it. I waited as the tiny speakers squeaked out sped-up Norwegian. We are only happy you are well, I says pause. Quote, you are well, yes? Oh, mother, she gasped and threw herself down on her knees, still in my palm. I lowered her to the dais in the terrarium, but she stood and flap, 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 flew back up, clutching my thumb and holding on with all four limbs. I leaned my face closer and observed her. You are crying. And it occurred to me she likely saw me as a large version of herself, and that it may be just as well. You need not cry. She mumbled things, and I caught brief, faraway, quiet translations about heaven and gods. Child, I said as soothingly as I could, please. Though my agent later described my voice as, quote, an atrocious threat hissed from an angry snake. Okay, this is the fairy talking. I knew they were wrong about you. I leaned us both toward the enclosure and its microphones. I knew, and that's that last part's a quote. I wondered who they are and what they said. And then her note says, atheist, I suppose, if she thinks this is heaven and I'm a god. I shall return you now to your swarm. You must tell the others to open a... I paused. I sincerely doubted Butch's bodged-up translation thing could say, open a Chahaki vortex in Norwegian. But I needed to somehow convey that this planet was off-limits. You and your people need to take your ogre corn home. And I gestured with my other hand as my agent opened a vortex next to Old Mech's hourglass artifact. Wait for night if necessary, and a light by the stars you shall see in the night. I waited. This planet is off limits. It is a, end quote. I struggled to find a concept, quote, wild game preserve, end quote. I admit, and the reader perhaps anxious to back me up on this one, I am not good with improvisation. Quote, it is dangerous here. In a moment of brilliant irony, I quoted Macmillan's exasperation after regaining contact with his escape pod computer, after digging himself out of his own grave. Then her note says, after he was shot by a murdering, thieving neighbor. She was sobbing and holding on quite tightly at this point, attempting with comic futility to wrap her legs around my thumb. I won't. I cannot. I will stay with you, mother. I myself may have cried tears, were that a thing, but instead my nictitating membranes blinked and held and blinked again, repeatedly moistening my eyes. I tried again. No, you must tell them, and they must go home, and you need to go too. She clung and cried and sobbed and tried to hook her tiny ankles on my thumb. At this moment, I was glad I wasn't a mammal. This would be heart-wrenching. With my other hand, I carefully petted her and, child, no, you must. No, mother, I must not. Yes, no. All the while, her wings blinked yellow and green and both together, and they flapped at about the speed of my heartbeat. Child, I leaned in. You must. I won't. Butch looked at me, and I mimicked the way his people shrugged. I stood, and Butch, already on his feet, turned to the glowing orange vortex, the doorway to 1886. Butch, I, and the fairy, attached to my finger, took the two steps and appeared moments and mere meters from when we slipped out earlier. And there's a part break. Wow, at 13 and a half minutes. All right, just jumping to page 58, I guess, in the hymnal. And I guess somebody's going to park next to me with their music loud, because that's what we fucking do these days. It's kind of ironic because we're outside of a library. Anyway, 14 minutes. This is going to take a long time to upload. Alright, that asshole left. The loud music person. I don't know if I mentioned. I tweeted about it, though. So if you can go back in time and see tweets. Cutting it really close. It's about 10 till 7. This is supposed to be live at 15 after 7. So, I guess you'll know. I would say wish me luck. What did I say? Page 58? Alright, go to page 58 in the hymnal. Page 59 is a Gertrude Stein poem. So, 58 is Judy Graham. G-R-A-H-N. That's right, I pronounced it correctly. Love rode 1,500 miles on a Greyhound bus and climbed in my window one night to surprise both of us. The pleasure of that sleepy shock has lasted a decade now or more, because she is always still doing it and I am always still pleased. I do indeed like aggressive women who come half a continent just for me. I am not saying that patience is virtuous. Love, like anybody else, comes to those who wait actively and leave their windows open. I feel like we may have read that one before. I think we'll leave and come back on page 59, so put a marker, hold your finger in your hymnal. We'll come back to Gertrude. And now the last part of the last part of chapter 9 of Macmillan the Magician, which I guess that's 9.3. All right. I don't know. I thought it was good. Just keep your hymnals open. All right, so this is the last part of the last part. The last section of the last part of chapter 9 in Macmillan the Magician, if I can find it. Alright, so these little tiny sections don't have names. What happens is there's a break in the narrative. And so usually there's a break in the narrative because I put a break in the narrative in order to title it, name it. But in this case, the break comes because they jump through their vortex between locations. So there's a scene break, basically. All right, here we go. It's not very long. It's barely bigger than a page. The quote-unquote swarm and the giant ogre corn were rapidly advancing upon our position. Likely, too, it appeared to them we teleported a few meters to their left or whatever. At this point, especially as I repeated the words so many times in our argument, I said what I knew in Norwegian. Ga and fortell them. Go, tell them. Odin! Exclamation mark, question mark. Odin, she said, apparently meaning the ogre corn. She fluttered over and the blinking fairies all stopped, but the ogre corn continued and... Oh, there's an edit. We don't have time for this. I'm just editing. Okay, so it's pursued, but it had perused, because why the Alright. Odin, she said, apparently meaning the ogre corn. She fluttered over and the blinking fairies all stopped, but the ogre corn continued and pursued Butch for a few meters, caught him and dashed him violently against the hard ground, then lifted him and threw him down again. My agent lay motionless, and the giant monster turned to me, and I leaped into the air, landing briefly, and leapt again, landing near Butch and behind the monster. Butch was still alive. My agent was horribly mangled. I leaned down to grab him and was instead grabbed myself by Odin. This may be unpleasant, I recall saying to myself as I was thrust into the air, hoping to lose consciousness before the worst of it. Butch, meanwhile, possibly I'd touched him, was healing. The monster brought me up away from Butch, who may have been healed. Even later, it was unclear. Long afterwards, as we discussed this narrative, he insisted he lay still, pretending to be dead already. It, the monster, Odin, observed me with its eye and sniffed me, and for a terrible moment I feared it would try to mate with or eat me. But instead it attempted to rip my arms and legs off, which probably it succeeded, but I, mercifully, lost consciousness. Much later, I awoke. It was dark, but one could sense the dawn, and I detected the red iron ball of Mars, barely visible to humans, clearly, as Luna at full to me. Clear as Luna at full to me. The moment is frozen in my mind as... Ugh, I can't believe how many typos I have in this section. It's a terrible place for a typo because it's kind of the narrator giving away the next section. I don't want to repeat that, that's horrible. Much later, I awoke. It was dark, but one could sense the dawn, and I detected the red iron ball of Mars, barely visible to humans, clear as Luna at full to me. The moment is frozen in my mind as us all waiting for the light. Butch asked me what I remembered, and I repeated a version of what I wrote above. It was horrific, was all he would say. Our fairy and two more of her kind, but no more, apparently left behind when the others took their killing machine home, fluttered over as the sun emerged in the east, and I recognized them, if not her, and they came closer. Our fairy fluttered about my face and around my head, and her two mates played with Butch's hair and ears. They spoke, but neither of us could understand. End chapter 9. All right, my friends. This is 5 minutes. Wow, that's one page. I don't know what's wrong with me. All right, go to page 59 in your hymnal. And we'll add the Molly Molly background to it. You guys, this is the last section in the podcast. I'm sorry, the open mic night at the Cormorant Cafe, because that's what I'm doing. I'm totally in a cafe with audience. All right, as I said, hold your finger in the hymnal. We're on page 59. Gertrude Stein, it says it's from something called Before the Flowers of Friendship Faded, Friendship Faded.
kind of sat all by itself. There's a little subtitle, XXIX, what is that, 29? I love my love with a V, because it is like that. I love myself with a B, because I am beside that a king. I love my love with an A, because she is a queen. I love my love, and A is the best of then. Think well and be a king. Think more and think again. I love my love with a dress and a hat. I love my love, and not with this or with that. I love my love with a Y, because she is my bride. I love her with a D, because she is my love beside. Thank you for being there. Nobody has to care. Thank you for being here, because you are not there. And with and without me, which is and without, she can be. Late, and then, and how, and all around we think and found that it is time to cry, she and I. All right. Well, that was that. Now, the next part would just be me thanking people and telling you that it's been a joy. I hope you enjoyed chapter 9. Okay, my friends, my active listeners who are still here somehow, waiting for the night, waiting for the joining. Wait, what? Oh, that's another thing I wrote a long time ago. You've probably heard if you're listening to this. Yeah, I wrote that for a little girl named Winter, who now is a young woman named Winter, although that poor girl. Well, anyway, thanks for listening, and if you're subscribed, thanks for that. Let's see. Thanks for Jen and the introduction that she recorded for me, and obviously for her comedy clips and her statistical analysis and crime data, which was nice. She told me to suppress that. I told her there's no censorship in the Cormorant Cafe. No, I didn't tell her that. I told her that she'd have to text me to stop me from putting it in the episode. I thought that it would be nice to have three of hers. So the first half hour of this is all pretty much Jen Morency and the WTF, and the rest is me and the lesbian poetry in chapter 9. Anyway, I hope you liked it. Again, thank you to Jennifer. Thank you to you for listening, and have a good night. And hey, listen to that other bonus that I put up earlier today. That's so there's John Ormsby was a translator, and he did a translation of Don Quixote in the 1800s, and he has a translator's aside, like a preface at the beginning, and he has this short biography of Cervantes, and I was listening to it in kind of an audiobook format. You can look up some classic books in your podcast players, and there are organizations out there that take volunteers to read books, and then they show up as podcasts. And I listened to this and I was like, oh my god. And then I was trying to make it record, I was trying to put his version into our episode into the podcast, and it didn't let me record it or translate it. So I said, fine, it's in the public domain enough to be read out. So then it's in the public domain enough for me to find it and read it. I tried to get it from Amazon, so I wasted $3, $4, because the version of the Ormsby translation didn't come with the preface for some reason. So then I found it for free online, so fuck me, I'm an idiot. Anyway, thanks again for listening. Go listen to that. And, yeah, thanks again. Good night.
I am reality's whore!